Your Chicago Bulls play here. On the proud new home of the Chicago Bulls.
WLS AM 890.
Double bam! Get out the umbrellas, Bill.
What time is it? Game time!
Wade with a hidden shoulder fake.
To the rack! Oh my goodness, Wayne Wade!
Caps up a three.
Bam! Jimmy Butler's big time onion!
Side jumper off the mark.
Oh, back of right hand! Felicia right in the mug! A Miles Plumlee!
Throw it!
Oh my!
Down, big man! Throw it down!
On the new home of the Chicago Bulls, this is Chicago Bulls Live. And now, here's Steve Cashel.
Welcome in, everyone. The Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball in the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. During a recent visit to New York, Chuck Swirsky had the opportunity to visit with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver.
Is there a typical day in the life of Commissioner Adam Silver?
A typical day? Not really. And that's what makes the job so fantastic. Last week was opening week. I was in Cleveland on Tuesday. I was in L.A. on Wednesday. I was in Sacramento on Thursday. Flew home overnight. Was in New York Friday. I was at the Knicks game against the Grizzlies on Saturday. So, one, I get to go to a lot of games. I travel a fair amount, not just around the United States, but also internationally. As you know, we're doing a lot in China. We're increasingly doing things in India and Africa, of course, Europe as well. I was down in Brazil for the Olympics this summer. So a large part of my job is being the face of the league, being a representative, showing up. I've learned that more and more that's part of it. But also in the office, it's more of a traditional management job than some might think. We have roughly 1,000 people in the league office, and we have a senior management team. Today is Monday. We had a staff meeting this morning with our senior management group. We go over the events of the week, some of the things that happened last week. Every day I'm talking to owners, talking to our broadcasters, media members, other business partners of the league, dealing with issues that may come up at any given time. So it's very diverse. Mm-hmm. So typical when I'm not traveling, as I said, it's more of an office job than people might think. I mean, we're structured like a typical business with reports to me, and people do lots of emails, and you know, we walk the halls, and we have a cafeteria where we eat lunch. So
a real cafeteria.
So I, you know, it's and as you know, this is my 25th year.
Yes, it is.
At the NBA, and it's my sixth job here. So the good news is...
Your sixth job? Yeah. Can you name all six other than commissioner, the other five?
My first position was special assistant to the commissioner. Then I became chief of staff in the commissioner's office. Then I was senior vice president. That I may have added. Then I was.
Oh, that's a lot of responsibility.
Then I was president of NBA Entertainment.
Wow.
Then I was the deputy commissioner, and then I
the
became
commissioner.
Yeah.
Wow, 25 years.
You know, but and it really helped me in a way to have worked my way up through the organization, because I can understand the league from many different perspectives, not just being in essence the CEO. And also having been the longtime assistant and report to David Stern. Obviously, I learned a ton from him, and even from early days in the league when I was his special assistant. I traveled around the league with him. I got to sit in meetings with him. So I was sort of the proverbial fly on the wall in many contexts. So I got to see how he did things, how people responded to him, but also built a lot of great relationships around the league with people like you, frankly.
Well, thank you, Adam.
Even much longer than I have.
And that's my next question, because you're so well received by different elements and layers of across the board in the league. Owners, players have a ton of respect for you, media members and whatnot. How would you describe your management style, and why are you so successful?
Well, I'd only say I begin by saying there's no wood here, but you know, I'm knocking for the listeners that I've been on the job roughly 2.5 years, and I've been around sports and this league long enough to know that every day is a new day. So I'm fortunate that things are going well, but I recognize there's always issues, and David dealt with so many difficult things over the years that I think as popular as he was, he also ran into his fair share of difficult issues, and often there's two sides to those issues, and you're invariably going to make some group of people unhappy.
Understand.
So having said all that, I think, again, I've been very fortunate now to have been with the league so long, to have been in those other positions where I could see things from different people's perspectives. I think it helped me a lot. My travels with teams, whether it's with broadcasters like yourself or media members or team employees, players, to hear how they view it from their perspective. And I always think that it's helpful to put yourself in the other person's shoes. My father, who's no longer around, was a labor negotiator, actually, and he taught me that from a young age, that you should always try to see things from other people's perspective. And I think that advice has really helped me over the years. And at the end of the day, this is, like so many businesses, a relationship business. And there's no shortcut to building those relationships. And I often tell that to the young people in this office who seemingly live with their heads down on their phones all day or in some device where they're texting and emailing and doing other things, that's all great. And I am a frequent user of those devices as well. But it's not a substitute for sitting with people, talking to people, listening to people, trying to understand other people's perspectives. And that's what I've tried to do over the years. And again, I've been so fortunate too that have fantastic mentors, people like David Stern, Jerry Reinsdorf, Jerry Colangelo, you know, these people who had been with the league so long, who, you know, were very generous with their time over the years. And now with fantastic group of owners, many next generation owners who come into this league now, people roughly same generation I am, who share life experiences, who do business all over the world. People have media expertise, technology expertise, who've come in this league. And what I'm really trying to do now is take advantage of all those resources, so every team is the beneficiary of an owner like Steve Ballmer coming in with his expertise in technology, with Vivek Ranadive, who was born in India and is a technologist and done business all over the world, or for that matter, Jim Dolan, who owned a major cable company in New York and was at the forefront of new media.
Oh, well, that brings us to Jerry Reinsdorf, member now of the Basketball Hall of Fame. What impact, Commissioner, do you think he has had on the NBA and now with Michael as the president and COO? Give me an idea about what your relationship with Jerry and the Reinsdorf family is all about and how they've impacted the Bulls.
I've had a wonderful relationship with Jerry and now with Michael over the years. Jerry has been an innovator in all sports, of course, not just in basketball. He is an extraordinary business person. I think he's someone who, again, from an early time in the league, was someone that I flocked to because he was one of the few owners early on who was, in essence, a full-time owner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the old days,
yes,
most of the owners had day jobs.
You
know, he was someone who made a business out of sports and had multiple teams, so he had many different perspectives. He was someone over the years that shared with me insights about how things were done in baseball, so gave me a better understanding of some best practices that we could use in the NBA as well. Of course, because of those great Bulls teams and Michael Jordan, he was at the forefront of the international growth of this sport. He also, you know, there's a side of him that my sense is the public doesn't often see, and that is he's got a great sense of humor. He has a way of always keeping things light, keeping things in perspective. And as I said, I think, you know, over the years, we've done lots of business deals together. He's been very involved with Major League Baseball's Advanced Media Corporation, BAM, as they call it. And he, at the early days of digital media, he saw that there was going to be a great opportunity for leagues there. And so, again, we've had a terrific rapport over the years, just sharing ideas. And also, I think, again, having come into this business as somebody who had just left the practice of law, which I, it was only for a few years that I practiced law, but then went, in essence, full-time into a business job, he was someone I could turn to get advice about deal-making, about just how to approach issues and solve problems. And so, again, and to this day, you know, and now I deal with Michael almost as much as Jerry, and the two of them are a great combination, and sort of a wisdom and operational experience, and again with a perspective that is far greater than just one team. So you know, he's done so much for this league.
Many thanks to the Bulls podcast called Timeout Bulls, driven by Lexus, also available on iTunes. And when we come back, part two of Chuck Swirsky's interview with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. This is Chicago Bulls Live on WLS AM 890.
This is the new home of Chicago Bulls basketball. Hear every Chicago Bulls game here. WLS AM 890. Now back to the Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone. The Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. Now we present part two of Chuck Swirsky's interview with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver.
Well, in the limited time we have, I want to talk about Chicago for a moment because you attended the University of Chicago Law School, graduated, of course. Give me an idea what it was like attending law school. Did you have a chance to go to many Bulls games at the old Chicago Stadium to see Jordan? And what was your passion like regarding NBA ball at that period of time in Adam Silver's life?
All right, so at the risk of irritating possibly some of your listeners, I was a Knicks fan growing up. I have long ago parked any individual team rooting interest when I came to the league.
I get it.
92, but I did grow up in New York, and I was a Knicks fan. So I got to Chicago, I believe, in the fall of 1985. I had been an undergraduate at Duke University. I had then worked for Congress for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then came to law school in Chicago. So I came to town as a Knicks fan. And I know my, certainly my first year in law school, it was not nearly as difficult, to, as you'll recall, to get tickets in those days.
True.
At the old Chicago Stadium. And so I remember I had a few, or many classmates were from New York, but a group of us who were all diehard basketball fans and Knicks fans. And I remember also Gene Banks, who had
played Duke, from Duke,
was a Bull.
Yeah.
And so when the Knicks were in town, we used to go to Bulls games. And then we'd, you know, circle a few other games as well on the calendar. And it was, I believe, Michael's second season. And I most of my recollection, he was injured.
Yes, with a foot, stress fracture.
That season. But it was really fun to go to Bulls games. I mean, it wasn't all that expensive, and I'm not saying we were sitting courtside, but you could get decent seats. And then Michael started to pick up over my time there, and people began to say there's something special going on here. You know, the team wasn't far from winning championships in those days, but I think then we started to go to more games just because it was the Bulls playing, not necessarily because there was a team in town we wanted to see. And it was a fun thing to do. And so I combination of having grown up in New York as a Knicks fan, then having gone to Duke and becoming a Blue Devil, and I wasn't a huge college basketball fan when I was growing up. There was Iona College in New Rochelle, which was near my hometown of Rye, so I followed Iona in college. But
I think Jeff Rulin went to Iona.
Jeff Rulin was there. Absolutely. Yeah, there's some legendary stories about Jeff. And so I became a much bigger just basketball fan generally, when I was in college. So in law school, I started following the Bulls. I didn't necessarily change my allegiance, but I enjoyed watching those teams. And there was an All-Star game. Must have been 1988.
Yes, it was.
And I remember getting tickets, not to the game itself, but to All-Star Saturday night.
Oh, boy.
Of that All-Star weekend. That was the famous Michael.
Michael and Dominique.
Dunk contest.
To this day, Dominique still believes he won it, and had it been other than Chicago, he would have beaten Jordan.
I wasn't involved in the league yet.
No comment on that. That's right.
But I remember being there and the lights going down, and Michael, I actually vivid recollection of him clearing them. People were sitting on the court at the far other end for where he was beginning his sprint.
Yes,
where he was
yes.
Launch off the free throw line. So I remember that. And there was clearly something special going on at the league at that time. You could feel it, not just in the building, but among the fans, that it was Michael, but of course Magic and Larry and all these players together, that it was a coming of age, you know, for the NBA, that it there was a hipness, a coolness, just something about everything that was happening. And again, back to Jerry for a second, and that of course my good friend Rod Thorne, who I worked with for many years, was the general manager when Michael was drafted. But Jerry, of course, as the general partner of the organization, was ultimately responsible. And you know, I've learned from Jerry too that you hit the right moment, you know, with drafting Michael Jordan, having him turn out to be maybe even greater than anyone had expected, and then he knew how to take advantage of it. And they built on something special there. Steve Shanwald, as I don't know if he was title then, was president, but running the marketing operation for the team. And they quickly realized that they had something special, and it spread nationally and then globally.
Yes, the Bulls brand, off the charts, even to this day. You travel, as you know.
You still see that logo.
Yeah. All right, two final questions, and I'll let you go. Number one.
I don't have to go so quick.
Okay, great. Well, if you could stay, that'd be great. So as far as basketball is concerned, you mentioned globally where it's at. Give the message to young people, that the millennials that are out there that are gravitating to this sport globally. Where is this game today, and where do you think it's going?
Oh, boy. Well, I'll begin with where it is today. And today it's a global game, a fast-paced game, a game that aesthetically, when I look at the style of play on the floor now, is, let's say, compared to 10 years ago, I think it's never been more attractive, inviting to fans. Again, I think that people...
And the players are enjoying it.
At your point, you say the players, but who incidentally, you ask about millennials. That's our players, of
yes.
course. You know, so... I'm always reminded our core fan base is roughly the same age, you know, 18 to 34 of the core fans that ESPN and TNT care about, but then the broader audience of 18 to 49 that the advertisers are very focused on. To your point, a lot of millennials, I think they love the diversity of the game. Incidentally, this season, for the first time, we're going to hit 25% internationally born players in the league. 113 players out of roughly 450 on opening day rosters were born outside the United States. And that's very, in many ways, reflective of the United States, a country of immigrants, a very diverse country. And I think that, so increasingly, our diverse population can relate to the NBA. I think that it's a game that's accessible. I always say there's a reason that all of us grew up playing basketball in gym class, because you had a confined space. You give kids a ball, boys
agreed.
And girls.
Yes.
And, you know, it's incredibly difficult to be great at it, but almost everyone can participate. Incidentally, I think there's a reason the two most popular sports in the world, soccer and basketball, they both have round balls, one you kick, you know, one you bounce and shoot. And I think there's something almost evolutionary about that. So this game also has all these wonderful, terrific values associated with it. Things that, for example, Bill Bradley has written about in terms of teaching teamwork and discipline and respect and hard work to be successful at it. So I think that's one of the reasons why it's so popular internationally. We're often, it's governments embracing this game. And again, people are increasingly moving to urban areas and where, as much as they want to be outdoors and play sports out on grass or large fields, often those fields aren't available in dense urban populations, or the weather doesn't allow for it. So that's why I think basketball has such an important place in our society right now. And in terms of the future, families, governments are increasingly focused on health and fitness. What an ideal sport for that. Again, as I said, can be played equally by girls as boys. The team aspect of it, all building important relationships or ways to relate to people that become as critically important for dealing in life. As I said, mm-hmm. we talked about relationship businesses. Those skills are just as important for life as they are for sports. And it's a sport that is seemingly ready-made for social media. That the proximity of our players to the fans, that we all know from, you have the best seat in all of sports when you're doing your job, that courtside seat.
Yes.
At an NBA game. And I think while only a select few fans can have that courtside seat, that through great forms of digital technology, social media, we can try to replicate that experience for fans. And our players seem to gravitate towards social media. It gives them an opportunity to have direct relationships with fans, whether it's talking about aspects of their game or seeing highlights or sharing more of their lives with fans. This is what my interest is. This is the music I listen to. This is the clothes I wear. This is the food I like. Things like that. You know, increasingly through social media, fans all over the world can feel connected to our players. And it's remarkable. We now have there are now more than 1 billion people in the world, 1 out of 7 people on the planet, who experience some part of the NBA through social media, whether it's the league's Twitter feed or Facebook pages or Instagram accounts or teams, you know, players talking directly to fans through their social media accounts. So again, I one of the things we're doing as a league together with our teams is fueling this thirst for social media by putting lots of content out there. So people who will never ever get a chance to experience our game in person, because not only are tickets unlikely to be available, but they may never even be in the United States. Let alone in an NBA city. And through all these great forms of media, they can experience the game on a personal level.
Again, many thanks to Time Out Bulls, the podcast driven by Lexus, also available on iTunes. And when we come back on Chicago Bulls Live, a one-on-one interview with former Chicago Bulls great Horace Grant. Stay with us on Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890.
Everything you need to start your week smarter and happier. Big John and Ray. Monday morning starting at 5 on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back, everybody, to Chicago Bulls Live. So happy to be joined by my very special guest, special advisor to Bulls President Michael Reinsdorf, Horace Grant. Horace, it's great to see you once again. You got the Bulls championship ring from the second season, I see, and you wear it proudly, don't you?
Very much. You know, Steve, thanks for having me. It's great to be back, part of a great organization, a great family, and I wear the second one and the first one and the third one very proudly.
And you're actually a four-time NBA world champion. You won one with the Lakers. What was that like?
Well, I was very fortunate to play with Shaq and Kobe and Derek Fisher, Robert Horry, Brian Shaw, Rick Fox. You can name quite a few others down there in L.A. And, you know, fortunately, we had the team to win a championship in 2001.
So which of the four championships, Horace, was the most special to you?
Well, you know, everyone is very special because it's so difficult to repeat and repeat and repeat, you know, even to win one. But if I have to choose one, I would say the second one, because that 92 finals against Portland Trailblazers, who was a very good basketball team with Clyde Drexler, Terry Porter, the late, great Jerome Kersey, and Duckworth and Buck Williams and Cliff Robinson. But that one was special because without the three-point shooting of Bobby Hansen and our bench, I don't think that we would have won that championship, because we weren't having a great game, and the bench came in and played such a great part of that particular game, and it helped push us to our second championship.
That was fantastic. I'm visiting with Horace Grant. I'm Steve Cashel at Chicago Bulls Live. Horace, in a new role, as I mentioned before, special advisor to Bulls president Michael Reinsdorf. How did this come about?
Well, you know, Michael talked to me, and we had a meeting over dinner. He asked me would I be interested in joining the Bulls organization. And before he even got the words out of his mouth, I said to him, tell me what you need. And he gave me the format, and I said, I'm on board. And from this point on, it has been such a great experience for me, and I can't wait to continue to work with kids in the community, speak to their sponsors and their partners, and just be a part of, giving something back to the fans here in Chicago.
I think it's terrific. And what do you think of the Bulls product right now on the floor? We've got Rondo and Wade, Jimmy Butler. It's not the big three, but it's a good three. And everyone thinks they're going to be compelling, but I'm sure they're going to have their ups and downs. What do you think, Horace, about this year's squad with Fred Hoiberg?
Well, I think Fred is a great coach, especially for this team. With the addition to Rondo and Wade and Lopez and, my nephew, and I think it's about six or seven different parts of this team. It's going to take a little time. I ask the Bulls fans to be a little patient. It's going to take a little time to mesh together. As long as we keep everybody healthy and they can play some good defense, I think personally that they could be right there with Toronto and Cleveland.
And you mentioned your nephew. So people are saying, wait, Horace has a nephew on the team? Of course, it's Jaren Grant, the son of your brother Harvey. That's right. What, did you watch him growing up play?
Well, absolutely. I mean, he's been visiting me for the last, I'd say, 10 years in L.A., in California, rather, to come out there, relax, and train with me since he was about 10 to 12 years old. So I watch him grow as a person and as a basketball player. And I told Fred that he's probably going to need to take a counterprong and punch him a little bit to get him going.
He had a really, really nice career in college, of course. Then he played for the New York Knicks, the old hated New York Knicks, right? But you've got to feel special that he's a member of the Chicago Bulls. What does that mean to you?
Well, he had a great year, a great career at Notre Dame, who made it to the, NCAA playoffs. But, his time in New York was great, was a great experience. But just to have him here in Chicago, I think it's the best fit for him. He's playing behind some great guards and Rondo and Wade, and he can only get better and learn from those types of guys.
Visiting with Horace Grant, now in a role of special advisor to Bulls president Michael Reinsdorf. Horace, of course, a four-time NBA world champion, three with the Chicago Bulls, one with the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live. So take me back when your career, Horace, and what jumps out at you? What stands out? Was it playing with Michael? Was it winning the championship? Playing for Phil? Scottie Pippen? I mean, is it the friendships? What do you remember most?
Oh, wow. Steve, it's all the above. Getting drafted in 1987 and being on the same team as a Michael Jordan. And then having the friendship, growing friendship with Scottie Pippen, growing together as friends first and then teammates. And then having the mentorship of a Phil Jackson, not was just a coach, but a mentor for me personally. And let's not forget the great Johnny Bock, who was a father figure to me. And when I was down in a lot of times, you know, he would come to me and give me fatherly advice first and then a coach. All of these memories that I kept within me to make me, you know, really appreciate the position I am in right now.
Absolutely. And Horace, when you think about Phil Jackson, is that just a one-of-a-kind coach? I mean, some people thought, you know, well, there's better X's and O's guys, but the way he managed, but it kind of reminds me of Joe Maddon with the Chicago Cubs, does he?
Exactly. I couldn't put it better myself. You know, when Phil Jackson coached, and I mean, we used that word coach as a metaphor in a certain way, but he was more of a mentor. I mean, for a guy to take all of these different personalities and combine them to have one mind and one body, and that's to win championship. I mean, from MJ to Scotty to myself, and for the second three-peat, MJ, Scotty, and Dennis. And once you could do that, I mean, you know, you just break the mold and throw it away.
And, you know, you played and you won a championship, obviously three with Michael and one with Kobe. How do you compare Michael and Kobe? Were they a lot of the same player?
They are. I mean, I've been asked that question quite a few times, and they are similar to same players. And I tell people, I've seen Michael work on and off the court. I mean, you know, when practice was over, he's out there shooting. During the summer, he's working on his game. And Kobe was the same way. They only make their teammates better. And I've seen them take over games when if Scotty got into foul trouble or with Kobe, when Shaq got into foul trouble, they took over the games. I can say the difference is MJ, 6 championships, Kobe, 5, and MJ have a whole bunch of more MVPs.
And a little bit more money, right?
Yeah, when you're a billionaire, yeah, yeah.
And finally, Horace, as we wrap up our interview, thank you so much for joining us. Horace Grant, now a special advisor to Bulls president Michael Reinsdorf. What does it mean when you were a player and successful and you're winning championships and you take a few years off, many years off, and then you're back with the franchise, the love for this franchise, and what does that mean to you?
Well, what does that mean to me in terms of, you know, you're gone away from home for quite a few years? It's like the prodigal son. You know, you come home and you have a family waiting for you and welcome you with open arms. And this, I tell people all the time, this is the greatest city and fans in the world.
Absolutely. Very well said. That's Horace Grant, 4-time NBA world champion. We thank Horace for joining us. I'm Steve Cashel, back with more of Chicago Bulls Live after this on WLS AM 890.
To make your drive home a little easier, Steve Dahl is here. 2 till 6 every weekday afternoon on WLS AM 890. Now back to Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. I'm Steve Cashel. You know, Jimmy Butler has been in attack mode to open the season with nearly three-quarters of his points so far being scored either in the paint or at the foul line. Jimmy Butler has averaged a team-high 8 free-throw attempts per game in the young season, including getting to the line 10 times or more in many of the games. Jimmy's also leading the Bulls in scoring, averaging around 23 points per game, which is a couple ahead of his average from last season. Chuck Swirsky caught up with Jimmy Buckets, who talks about what his daily routine is like.
I do the same thing every single day, depending on who's with me. So at any given time, my trainer could be here with me like he is today on this trip, on the next two trips. So before shoot around, we always come over early and work out. And then we go back, we'll always have lunch together. Or a brunch. So when I get back to the hotel room, me and my trainer will go eat and just talk about life, talk about the game. And then we'll go back, play some dominoes, read the Bible, and get ready to go to work.
Okay, so there's a lot there. So I want to ask you, number one, how many hours of sleep do you get a night? For example, if you have a game the next day, do you try and get 6 hours, 8 hours? Does your body need more than that, less than that? What?
Truthfully, my sleeping patterns is It's very unhealthy. Like last night I went to sleep at 4:30 and I was up at 8. Only because my mind doesn't let me sleep because I want this team to do so well. I want to do so well that I just study the game, how I can be better, how I can make my teammates better. I don't think I need sleep like that. I'll sleep on a day off, make sure I still get in the gym, but I think that's when I catch up on everything. I think we have a really good team, and I know how hard everybody else is working, so I think it's my duty to work hard as well.
So, Jimmy, are you able to compartmentalize, or do you take a game home with you after a loss, or do you start thinking about, you know, the third quarter, I should have made that play, or boy, had we just done a better job early in the fourth? I mean, are you able to let it go?
In the game, I think it's good to have short-term memory loss. As my trainer always tells me, if you miss a shot, you get a turnover. You have you mess up on an assignment. Forget about it, get to the next play. But I still remember it, and I think that's what my journal's for. I journal a lot throughout the day after every game just so I can get all my thoughts down on paper so it doesn't stay in my head and eat me like it normally does. So that's what I do majority of the time at night. I'm journaling so I get all of my thoughts out on paper or in my computer.
All right, how about food? Do you ever want to say, you know, I'm going to have a double cheeseburger today?
I don't eat red meat, so I can't have a double cheeseburger. But normally before the game it's pasta, some chicken, or just some chicken and mashed potatoes, chicken and rice, something real basic. I'm big on just eating chicken, so a lot of chicken, maybe some fish here in the game, but normally just chicken
for me. Do you snack?
Not really. We got protein shakes, drinks a lot of water.
Do you ever say I wanted a Dr. Pepper?
I don't drink soda, so I drink Arnold Palmer, RIP big fella. I drink a lot of Arnold Palmers.
All right, so your music, and I know you love country music. Do you deviate from that, or is everything country?
No, I listen to a little bit of everything. I listen to hip-hop. I listen to pop, little rock and roll, some jazz, Zydeco. I listen to a lot of different types of music. It's just, man, like you ask my teammates, they'd be like, yo, your music selection's everywhere, which it really is. Like one day I'll be listening to Whitney Houston, and the next day I'll be listening to Korn or something like that. So however I feel.
All right, one final question, Jimmy. Your fashion statement, you've had a lot of people obviously profile you in the media on different magazines. How much pride do you take in your fashion?
I take a lot in it now because I know how important it is. And it's fun. You can do what you want to do. Everything's a little different. Fashion's easy. I'll just throw some stuff together and make sure I match.
Do you take an NBA nap, by the way?
No naps.
No naps.
Great inside stuff from Jimmy Butler. Many thanks to Chuck Swirsky. It's great seeing in the life of an NBA player. And we'll see if Jimmy heads to his third consecutive All-Star game. He's on quite a tear right now, leading the Bulls in scoring. Let's talk about the Bulls' schedules. After tonight's game against the Washington Wizards, the Bulls then head out on their annual circus trip next week, which is a 6-game 12-night journey taking them through Thanksgiving. Now, the trip will begin Tuesday night in Portland, Oregon. Then, following a day off, the Bulls take on the Utah Jazz in Salt Lake City. And then it's on to Los Angeles for a neat 2-games-and-2-night set at Staples Center in L.A. First, on Saturday night, the Bulls will take on Doc Rivers, and the L.A. Clippers are off to a great start in the Western Conference. Then on Sunday night, the night after, the Bulls will take on the Lakers at Staples Center. Lakers featuring new head coach Luke Walton, trying to get that team back on track. Of course, the Lakers' first year beyond the Kobe Bryant era. And then it's one more game out west for the Chicago Bulls. They travel to Denver to take on the Nuggets. That's Tuesday night in the Mile High City. And then instead of coming home for Thanksgiving, the Bulls will travel to Philadelphia. They'll spend the Thanksgiving holiday in the city of brotherly love and then get ready to take on the Philadelphia 76ers on Friday night, the day after Thanksgiving. So another busy circus trip for the Chicago Bulls. Once again, 6 games in 12 nights. And then following 4 consecutive days off, which is a real rarity in the schedule, the Bulls will close out the month of November with a home game against the Los Angeles Lakers, which is on Wednesday, November 30th. And then December, maybe the busiest month I've ever seen an NBA season. 17 games for the Chicago Bulls in the month of December, but 11 of those at home. So after playing most of their games on the road in November, 11 of their 17 at home, beginning with the defending NBA champion Cleveland Cavaliers on Friday, December 2nd. So a lot coming up ahead for the Chicago Bulls. Many thanks again to the Chicago Bulls podcast, Timeout Bulls, driven by Lexus, and also available on iTunes. Many thanks to Chuck Swirsky for his contribution. We thank Adam Silver and Horace Grant for chipping in as well. And coming up next here on WLS AM 890, the Chicago Bulls pregame show as the Bulls get ready to take on the Washington Wizards. Many thanks to our executive producer, Dave Zaslowski. We hope you enjoyed Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our weekly program inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. Again, Chicago Bulls Live coming your way each and every Saturday afternoon only on WLS AM 890. I'm Steve Cashel. Thanks for listening. The Bulls pregame show is next. Stay with us on WLS AM 890.